Systemae Mechanicum. The Tempest Line had been breached. The sovereign territory of one of the most honorable legios of Mars had been violated. Armed engines had blatantly marched from their fortress and come with warlike intent to another. Despite the evidence before him, Princeps Cavallario could still not accept that Mortis wanted to exchange fire. Why would they risk such a thing? Supporting Horus Lupercal and engaging in provocation was one thing, but daring another legio to fire upon your engines made no sense unless there was a darker, more far-reaching scheme at work. If battle were joined here, little would survive, and even with the Imperator, Mortis would not walk away unscathed. Cavallario had always suspected that Camulos was a man unsuited for command, and this confrontation seemed only to confirm his suspicions. It was madness, and Cavallario did not want to be sucked into that madness. The factions of the Mechanicum might make war on one another, but the Titan legions were supposed to be above such things, to hold the ideals of a united Mars and Terra above all things, even their own differences.
"My Princeps," said Moderati Kuiper, "the Tempest Line."
"I know," said Cavallario.
"Should we open fire?"
"You have a solution?"
"At this range, we don't need one,"
Kuiper assured him.
"That monster's so large we won't miss."
Cavallario nodded, sweat streaming from his brow, and his mouth dry. His heart was beating in brutal syncopation with the fiery heart of Victorix Magna, the straining power of a supernova at the engine's core burning hotter and faster than it was ever designed to. He could hear Magos Argaia's desperate supplications to the reactor's spirit and felt the anguish of the mighty engine and the numbness spreading through his limbs. The image of the Imperator filled his senses, both through the viewscreen and through the manifold. Data scrolled like liquid light through his mind, and he drank in the colossal feats of engineering that had gone into its construction and the utter lethality of its existence. Its limbs were death incarnate, the grinning skull face, an abominable harbinger of destruction. The bristling weapon towers and bastions were a martial city fortress carried on the back of an ancient god, though this burden was borne willingly and not as a punishment. To fight such a thing would be the greatest achievement of any princeps, but it would probably also be his last. The monster took another step, taking with it any chance that this crossing of the Tempest Line was accidental.
"Princeps Sharak requests instructions," called out Kuiper. "Arcadia Fortis requests permission to fire."
"Vulpus Rex and Astrus Lux moving into flank fire positions," noted Pallas.
"Tell them to hold positions, damn them,"
shouted Cavallario, his pulse racing like the roaring discharge of a Gatling cannon.
"No one opens fire unless I give the order. Make sure that last part is especially clear, Kuiper."
"Yes, my Princeps."
Cavallario had the sensation of events sliding beyond his control, and he fought for breath as the fire from his loyal engine's heart poured through the virtual marrow of his body like blood from a ruptured artery. His vision blurred, the edges of the manifold swimming like a badly tuned pictor. Victorix Magna was hurting badly, and Cavallario knew he had to end this ugly confrontation soon. But how to do that without beginning a firefight that would destroy them all? Raptoria strained at the edges of Princeps Cassim's control, a feral, bestial thing that demanded blood and poured violent thoughts into his consciousness. Its murderous heart had tasted the enemy's presence and felt the heat of its metal skin. It wanted to kill. Cassim looked down at the gold cog medallion he wore, and focused his mind on the discipline encoded into his thoughts by the Legio Magi before beginning this walk. Clogged data from previous engagements were washed from the peripherals grafted to the frontal lobes of each crewman's brain to ensure each engagement was begun without the mental baggage of the last, but the hungry taste of battle was impossible to wash away completely. No engine ever really forgot the hot, metallic flavor of war. Cassim could feel his steersman's efforts to keep the aggression from Raptoria's movements, and could hear the engine's hunger for battle in the thudding, roaring drumbeat of her reactor. Raptoria wanted to fight, and, damn it, so did he. Princeps Cavalerio was holding his fire, and so too must they, but it was galling to see the engines of Mortis so brazenly insulting the honor of Tempestus. To allow this act of defiance to go unpunished was a bitter pill to swallow, and he could already feel Raptoria's ire building within his skull with the malicious promise of future pain to come.
"Power up weapons," he ordered in an effort to assuage the engine's bloodlust. "Disengage safeties and surrender all firing authorities to me."
By assuming all firing authorities, he was making sure that the feral heart of Raptoria didn't overwhelm the low-grade brain coding of the emplaced gun servitors and open fire herself. Cassim didn't want his engine to act without his control, but if a shooting war started, he was going to be ready to prosecute it to the best of his ability.
"Why isn't the Stormlord opening fire?" wondered Moderati Voric. "Are you in a hurry to die?" asked Cassim. "Because that's what will happen if we let this get out of hand."
Despite his rebuke, Cassim was wondering the same thing. Mortis had clearly breached the Tempest Line, and Cavalerio was quite within his rights to fire. As much as his heart was spoiling for a fight, Cassim knew that the odds against victory were high. Staring into the manifold, Cassim saw the heroic form of the Victorix Magna standing firm before the monstrous, towering might of the Imperator. Beside her stood Arcadia Fortis and Metallus Sabrenia, all three engines dwarfed by the enemy engine.
"What are you planning, Stormlord?" whispered Cassim.
The Imperator loomed on the manifold, a glowering god of war that could destroy them all. A few more steps, and it would be right on top of them. In the cabin cockpit of Metallus Sabrenia, Princeps Sharak was wondering the same thing as Cassim. Moderati Bannon counted the ever-increasing distance Aquila Ignis was striding into the territory of Legio Tempestus. Increasing the angle of his view through the manifold, Sharak saw Victorix Magna standing proud beside him, venting hot exhaust gases and sweating lubricant from its overflows. Even without the spiking data readings, he could tell that the venerable engine was suffering.
"Come on, Indias," he whispered. "Hold her together a little longer."
He transferred his view outwards, seeing the agile, snapping forms of Vulpus Rex, Astrus Lux, and Raptoria darting around the edges and rear of the approaching Imperator like pack wolves hunting a stag. Ever bellicose, their weapons were powered and ready to fire. The ground shook, and Sharak could feel the tremor through every joint of his engine's structure. Inertial dampers could compensate for most fluctuations in a Titan's surrounding environment, but the mighty tread of such a colossal enemy was beyond its power to completely dissipate. He looked down at the faraway ground, feeling a stab of pity for the massed ranks of Skitari gathered around his engine's splayed feet. To face a beast like the Imperator from a warlord's cockpit was a terrifying enough prospect, but to stand naked before it without the protection of voids and armor, that was courage indeed.
"Range to target?"
asked Sharak, fighting to keep his tone even. The question was unnecessary. He could already see that the Imperator was less than 300 meters away, through the manifold, point-blank range by any normal measure of things, but insanely close in this situation. He could already hear the squeal and rasp of the voids as their fields warbled with the proximity.
250 meters, my princeps," said Bannon.
He spared a glance to his left. Victorix Magna stood implacable and immovable before the marching Imperator, and Sharak loved the Stormlord for his resolve as much as he was frustrated by his inaction. The tension within the cockpit compartment of Metallus Sabrenia was unbearable. Then a harsh, deafening squall shrilled across the Vox frequencies, a filthy blurt of continuous, corrupted code noise that sounded like throaty laughter. Sharak flinched, and his sensori screamed as the wailing shriek tore at their hearing.
"What in the name of the Omnisire is that?"
yelled Bannon, snatching the Vox set from his head. Sharak killed the audio as the cackling laughter code burbled over the Vox and the booming warhorns of the Mortis engines echoed from the towering cliffs of Ascreus Mons. The Imperator lowered its weapon arms, every horn, bell, and augmitter upon its colossal spires and bastions blaring in disdain. The noise was unimaginably loud, broadcast across every audible wavefront and code frequency. Debased and dirty code lines conveyed vile algorithms that Charak felt worming their way into his peripherals like viral code, and his Aegis protocols fought to prevent them from reaching the deep subsystems of Metallus Sabrenia.
"Princeps!" shouted Bannon. "Enemy course change detected!"
Charak gasped, his mind a whirl as his implants defended his neural paths from infection by the scrappy code fragments carried on the war scream of the Imperator. He forced his mind through the clotted data packets of black, oozing information that blurred his vision and saw that Bannon was right. The Imperator was changing course, its stride swinging to the east. Like a great ocean liner traveling at speed, the course of such a vast machine did not change swiftly, and its new heading would barely carry it past the southeastern skirts of Ascreus Mons.
"Darlin, intercept plot,"
hissed Charak, the beginnings of a blistering headache building behind his eyes.
"Where's it going?"
His sensori didn't answer, and Charak twisted his head to see Dolan lying supine on his reclined couch. The man's eyes rolled back into his skull, and foaming spittle gathered at the corners of his mouth. Charak meshed his senses briefly with Dolan's station, feeling the hash of viral code replicating like a plague within his I.O. ports, ready to spill out into the guts of the war engine. With a thought, Charak cut the link between Dolan's interfaces and the rest of the Titan, but even as he did so, he could feel the scrap code trying to find another way in.
"Moderati Bannon!" shouted Charak. "Disengage Sensori Dolan from his station, now!"
Bannon looked over at Dolan, who was convulsing as his corrupted cybernetic enhancements began fitting with the power of a grand mal seizure. Bannon disengaged his hard plugs as quickly as he dared and lurched across to the Sensori station, unsteady on his feet after so brutal a separation from the MIU. Charak turned his attention from the compromised Sensori officer and followed his own track on the enemy engines. An overlaid map of the Tharsis Montes swam into view, grainy and washed with fragments of faulty code. A red line extended from their current position, swinging around to the northeast and extending towards the port facilities of Tharsis Tholus, the primary embarkation point of Astartes supplies from the fabricator Locum's Mondus Oculum Forge. Charak dismissed the map as the shriek of voids filled the cockpit with a warbling, squealing howl of feedback. Like a million nails down a blackboard, titanic energies pushed against one another, scraping their invisible power together and sending flaring, whooping coils of colorful lightning discharge into the air.
"Sensori disconnected,"
called Bannon, and Charak looked round to see Dolan jerking and twitching on the deck, lubricant and jellied brain matter leaking from his cranial plugs.
"Good work, Bannon," said Charak. "Leave him and get back on station."
Charak returned his attention to the manifold, watching in ashamed relief as the might of the Imperator swung yet further away and the spine-shearing sound of void interference abated.
"All Tempestus engines," he said,
forcing a channel through the howling static that still laced the airwaves.
"Ease weapons, I repeat, ease weapons. Mortis are turning away. Acknowledge."
One by one, the affirmations of the Tempestus engines appeared on the manifold, and Charak let out a shuddering breath as he realized how close they had come to igniting a shooting war on the surface of Mars. The Imperator's escort of warlords moved with it, and the war machines of Legio Mortis began tramping away, each step carrying them further from the domain of Tempestus. Mortis were leaving, but Charak wanted to be sure they weren't about to turn back for another provocative pass.
"Raptoria, Vulpus Rex, follow Mortis and make sure they keep on their way,"
he ordered, wondering why the Stormlord was not issuing the order himself.
"Keep a safe distance back, but make sure they go."
The two warhounds set off without bothering to acknowledge his order, and Charak slumped deeper into the molded leather of his reclined seat. Sweat coated his brow, and his hair was soaked. He closed his eyes for a second, shutting out the data noise of the manifold and letting the human part of his mind process the near calamitous events of the past few minutes. Had it really been so short an engagement? He opened his eyes as the nagging static of the Vox remained unbroken by orders, information requests, or any form of leadership from Victorix Magna. Sharak looked over to the Stormlord's engine, a terrible sense of dread building in his gut, as he saw that Victorix Magna remained as she had since taking up station before the Imperator. That dread built as he saw fluid drooling in a black rain from her torso, and that the hissing plumes of superheated steam that ought to gust like breath from exhaust vents beneath her shoulder carapace had ceased. The engine's head was bowed, her limbs slack against her sides.
"Victorix Magna!"
called Sharak over the manifold, his fear rendering his communication sharper than he intended.
"Princeps Cavalerio, please acknowledge."
There was no response.
"Stormlord, please respond immediately."
A shift of view in the manifold, and Sharak's head sank to his chest as he inloaded the Auspex readings of the Stormlord's mighty engine. Victorix Magna was dead. Thousands of kilometers to the south of the confrontation between Mortis and Tempestus, deep in the desolate, empty wilderness of the southern Paladus, windborne ash blew across the cratered wastelands at the edge of the Daedalia Plenum. Even further south, the horizon burned with colorful fire, the skies striated with chemical pollutants and reeking gases expelled from the massive refineries that encircled the planet's equator. Only the hardiest scavengers attempted to eke out a living in this region of Mars, the spoil pickings usually too thin and too laden with toxins to be of any real use. One such scavenger was a man named Quinnox, a wizened prospector and former Skitarii, whose body had rejected the gross implants necessary for full assimilation into the ranks of the Mechanicum soldiery. Quinnox scoured the deserts and hardpan at the Daedalia Plenum in a ramshackle Cargo 5 bulk hauler that pulled a tender filled with scrap metal, held together by faith, hope, and fervent devotions to the machine god. Its plates were caked with rust, and its tracks streaked with corrosion from prolonged exposure to the hostile environment. Acrid fumes belched from the exhausts of his crawler, and the interior of his pressurized cabin smelled of sweat, recycled nutrient paste, and excitement. A cracked and filmy Auspex panel hung from the roof of the cabin, pinging with a hard return of solid material. Quinnox hadn't seen a signal this strong in decades and knew that this find could be the making of him. Whatever it was big, and his head darted from side to side, peering through the crazed glass of his cabin as he searched for any other scavengers that might have picked up this juicy find. Not that he could see much through the whipping scads of dust and ash that swirled around the crawler. His vehicle dipped into a gentle slope that gradually widened out into a shallow crater. The ground under the tracks was soft, irradiated sand, carried there by the freak atmospherics that blew from the monstrous refineries of black iron in the south. The pings of the Auspex grew more urgent, and he saw that he was practically right on top of his find, though he couldn't make out much beyond the dirty glass. Unhooking the Auspex from the roof, Quinnox hefted a simple bolt-action las carbine from the back of his cab and checked the load. There wasn't much left in it, but enough to deal with any feral servitors that might be lurking out in the wasteland. Looking at his useless augmetics, Quinnox felt a certain sympathy with the poor, wretched servitors, but not so much that he wouldn't put a bolt through their skulls if they tried to get between him and his find. Next, he lifted his pack and slid his arms through the straps before wrapping his rebreather hood tightly around his head. Quinnox then opened the cab to the elements, wincing at the force of the gale that plucked at his robes and threatened to slam the door back in his face. Getting too old for this life, he thought, as he climbed down the ladder and stepped onto the sand. He followed the strident chimes of the Auspex towards a large dune field ahead of him, trying to make out what it was reading. He couldn't see anything valuable, but as he drew closer, he saw that the nearest dune was a damn sight taller and more regular in shape than the others. Consulting the Auspex, Quinnox was pretty sure that whatever he was picking up was beneath the dune. Perhaps a flyer had crashed, or an ore tanker had been forced to ditch, and then been covered by the sands before its crew could send out a distress signal. Whichever it was, it marked the end of a lean patch for Quinnox Fortran. He slid the Auspex into a zipped pocket in his robes and slung his rifle as he approached the dune, clambering up on all fours as the sand spilled away beneath him. Climbing the dune was hard work, and he sweated profusely in the dry heat. Quinnox reached the top of the dune and began clearing away the sand with a collapsible shovel from his pack. With quick, economical strokes, he dug down into the sand, widening and deepening the hole as he went. Pausing only to take regular sips of brackish water from his hide canteen, Quinnox gradually cleared the top of the dune. The wind attempted to thwart his labours, blowing fresh sand and ash back into the hole, but after an hour of digging, his shovel struck metal, and he gave a grunt of pleasure.
"Right, let's see what you are then,"
he said, dropping the shovel and sweeping his gloved hands over the find. It was metal, sure enough, fresh and untainted by corrosion or rust. The surface patina was blackened, as though it had been scorched by intense heat, but as he scraped the edge of his shovel across it, he could see that the damage was only superficial. He cleared more sand away, guessing that the main body of whatever lay beneath him was roughly spherical from the curve of the exposed metal. More shovelfuls were scooped from the ground, and Quinnox frowned as he saw the outline of what looked like some kind of battle robot emerge. Three blisters of metal faced him, like sensor domes, but devoid of life.
"Now, what in the name of the Omnisire would you be doing out here?"
The Auspex chimed, loud, a strong signal. Puzzled, Quinnox dug the device from his robes and looked around him for the source. He could hear the roar of engines above the howl of the wind, but couldn't pinpoint its source. Quickly, he swept up his rifle, ready to defend his find, but there was nothing to see. A harsh beam of light stabbed from the sky above him, and Quinnox shielded his eyes as the roaring engine noise leapt in volume. The downdraft of a flyer's powerful jets blew up a storm of smoke and dust. He couldn't see anything through the whipping ash, but kept his rifle pulled hard into his shoulder. The pitch of the engines changed from a howl to a whine as the craft descended, and moments later the stab light was replaced with the diffuse glow of landing lights. As the dust settled, Quinnox looked up and saw a group of people marching towards him from the belly of a heavy lifter, an aircraft capable of transporting enormous items of machinery in its hold. The dust blurred the newcomers' forms, but whoever they weren't getting a piece of this motherload.
"This here's mine," he shouted,
jerking the barrel of his rifle towards the dune.
"I found it, and you ain't gonna take it off me. I got salvage rights."
The figures stepped into view, and Quinnox's heart sank as he saw a host of brutal-looking, body-armored Skitarii led by a robed adept of the Mechanicum. The adept was swathed in thick red robes and augmented with a multitude of glowing green cybernetics on snaking manipulators. He wore an iron mask with glowing red eyes and a huge mechanized device hunched at his shoulders.
"Actually, you don't,"
said the adept, one of his green-lit manip arms aiming at the machine beneath the sand.
"That machine belongs to me." "And who the hell are you?" "I am Master Adept Lucas Crom." "Never heard of you," said Quinnox.
The light at the end of Crom's manip arm flashed, and he said,
"Come. I am here to take you back to Mondus Gamma." "I ain't going nowhere with you,"
snapped Quinnox.
"I was not talking to you," said Crom. "I was talking to the Kaban machine."
The sand beneath Quinnox trembled, and he looked down in alarm as the sensor blisters he had uncovered lit up with a yellow glow. A tremble of power vibrated through the machine as its dormant power cells came back online and returned it to life. It lurched forward, and Quinnox lost his balance, sliding end over end down the shifting sand and losing his grip on his rifle. He fell to the ground and rolled onto his back as the awakened machine emerged from its concealment. Nearly 10 meters tall, its mass was roughly spherical, with two heavily weaponized arms attached on opposite sides. Behind high pauldrons to protect its sensor apparatus, a number of metallic arms extended from its shoulders, like massively thick mechadendrites equipped with a variety of lethal-looking weapons. The machine sat immobile for a few moments before training its weapons on his bulk hauler.
"No!"
shouted Quinnox, rising to his feet and scrambling towards the adept. His cry of protest was drowned out in a blaze of gunfire as sheeting hails of light blasted from the Kaban machine's weapons. Quinnox's vehicle exploded in a smoky orange fireball, the overpressure of the blast swatting him to the ground. He gasped acrid, toxin-laden air and realized that the explosion had torn the breathing apparatus from his face. He scrambled for his rebreather hood, but couldn't find it, feeling airborne poisons eating away the blood vessels of his lungs with every breath. He rolled onto his side, coughing up thick wads of phlegmy mucus as he felt a heavy rumbling through the ground. The machine was moving, and more of the sand fell away. Quinnox saw its body was mounted on a heavy gauge track unit that threshed sand before it gained traction and rumbled forward. Quinnox scrabbled pitifully at the ashen ground as it rolled towards him.
"Please, no!"
he screamed, the words gurgling as blood poured from his mouth. Its sensor blisters glittering with cold mechanical purpose, the Caban machine ignored his pleas and ground Quinnox into the Martian soil beneath its bulk. Beneath the towering peak of Olympus Mons, the Fabricator General watched as a parade of augmented Praetorian battle servitors marched from the labyrinth of Moravec. They moved by a variety of means of locomotion, some on tracks, some on clicking mechanical legs, others on thick, rubberized wheels, while some retained the use of their human legs. They filled the great engine hangars beneath the mountain, thousands of newly enhanced warriors ready to fight for Horus Lupercal. The power revealed within the vaults of Moravec was like nothing Kelbor Hal had ever known, the joyous tumult of it filling his bloodstream with vigor and insight beyond that of beings composed merely of flesh. Kelbor Hal felt a surge of raw, unfettered aggressive power through his crackling energy fields as he watched the assembling army. This was a time of great moment, though only he and Regulus were here to witness it. That would soon change when the dreadful war engines of the Mechanicum were unleashed, these weapons of the Dark Mechanicum. The weaponized servitors were huge, muscular, and sheathed in layered armor that was blackened like scorched flesh, their spines hunched over and threaded with barbed spikes. Those without mouths burbled scrap code from integral augmitters, a glorious hymnal to the newest power on Mars. Others, with etched bronze fright masks, spilled nonsense from bloodied lips that twisted and leered with brutal anticipation. Beside Kelbor Hal, Regulus watched the procession with glee, his electrical field warping and twisting with pleasure as each of the newly transformed servitor warriors emerged and took position within the great hangar.
"These are magnificent, Fabricator General," said Regulus in admiration. "The power of the warp and the power of the Mechanicum alloyed together in glorious fusion."
Kelbor Hal accepted the compliment, knowing that Lucas Crom had done the bulk of the work, but unwilling to admit the fact. He had simply combined Crom's advances in artificial sentience with the power contained within the vaults of Moravec to produce something wondrous.
"These servitors are just the beginning," said Kelbor Hal. "We begin work on the Skitari next. The scrap code has worked its way through the entire floodstream network of Olympus Mons and is already spreading beyond Tharsis."
Virtually every port and connective point on Mars was linked somewhere, and the glorious code of the warp was scurrying along every conduit, wire, fiber optic, wireless feed, and haptic implant. Soon it would reach every forge and adept, and those touched by its transformative power would be born anew.
"I can feel forges as far away as Sinus Sabaeus already scratching with elements of transformed code," confirmed Regulus. "Soon, the Aegis protocols of the other forges will be broken down to allow the scrap code into their inner workings."
"Then they will be ours," hissed Kelbor Hal.
"There will be resistance," replied Regulus. "Not all the forges are as vulnerable to the scrap code. The Magma City's links have proved to be resistant, as are those of Epluvian Maximal and Fabricator Locum Cain."
Kelbor Hal nodded.
"That is only to be expected. Adept Zeth is pioneering a newly developed form of nospheric data transfer. Her forge and those of her allies have been modified to utilize it over more traditional forms of communication."
"Nospheric? I am not familiar with the term."
"No matter," said Kelbor Hal. "It will be ours soon enough. I have dispatched Ambassador Melgator to the Magma City to sequester her data and determine her loyalties.
I already know her loyalties, Fabricator General. She is an enemy of the Warmaster.
Given what had happened after the opening of the vaults of Moravec, it was hard to fault Regulus's logic. When the skies above Olympus Mons had raged and buckled at the bloody dawn of this new power, freakishly induced weather patterns carried the echoes of its shrill afterbirth from the Great Mountain to every corner of Mars. Every corner but one. As the seething Martian skies darkened, a searing surge of psychic energy above Coriel-Zeth's magma city had pierced the heavens and almost drowned the birth shout of the emergent power with its light and violence. Kelbor Hal did not fully understand what he had witnessed that day, but Regulus had watched the event, the spiking flares of his magnetic field betraying his naked fear and hostility.
"What was that?" he had asked. "An accident? A weapon?"
"An enemy revealed," was all Regulus had said.